Welcome to Halacha in a Year, where we can get to learn all the most relevant halacha through the prism of the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. You are listening to Rabbi Yaakov Tramp. This shiur is kindly sponsored by the Moshe Group, NCA, in Zuchus of Rivka Bela, Bas Nechama Shifra, and in honor of Rabbi Tramp. Today we're going to be looking at Tefillin Part 2. This is Siman Yud in the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. Last time in the first part of Tefillin, we looked at four concepts. We looked at what the Tefillin are, the time for wearing them, the place for wearing them, and how to put them on. Today we're going to be looking at four last concepts, and they are the straps of the tefillin, the treatment of the tefillin, how to remove them, and checking the tefillin. Let's jump straight in. The first concept is the straps of the tefillin. How wide must the straps of the tefillin be? So the Torah tells us that we need to tie them, or kashartem. You should tie the tefillin. How are they tied? Tradition tells us, our oral tradition tells us, that the tying is done via a leather strap, which is made of an animal which is kosher. So those straps, how wide must they be? Our tradition tells us they must be at least the length of a barley grain, which is about 0.4 inches or 1 centimeter wide. There's no upwards limit. How long must they be? So for the shel yad, the one that belongs on the arm, that's very easy because it needs to be tied around the bicep and then wrapped 7 times around the arm and then around the hand to create the letter shin and around the fingers to create the 3 rings. So it needs to be long enough to be able to do that. Obviously, different people have different lengths of arms and different sizes of arms. And so it needs to be big enough to be able to do that. So generally speaking, this is less of an issue today with supplies being in easy to get to. For the shel rosh, it needs to be, technically speaking, that the right strap obviously needs to reach around the head and with a knot at the back, but the right strap which hangs down needs to reach at least to the navel, to the stomach. And the other, the left-hand one needs to go to the chest. However, the Kitzur points out that it's best that the right-hand one reaches down to below the area of the bris milah and the left one to the stomach. And part of that is sort of connecting the ideas of God's ideas, these four ideas about how Hashem acts through history and how HaKadosh Baruch Hu is yachid ba'olamo, is singular in the world, connecting that with the way one eats and the way one keeps one's morality. So those ideas are trickling down into one's body is part of this image as well. How should the straps be positioned? This is very important, is that the critical area of the straps is around the bicep where the knot is and around the skull where the knot is on the head. Those are the two critical areas. Those areas, the black part must be facing outwards. It's very important for that. So much so that what happens if the straps are not in the correct orientation? So let's say one, by mistake, puts on, this is quite common, the shel rosh, the one that one's head doesn't notice, one doesn't feel all the way around that it's the right way, and it's actually the underside, which is usually a lighter white color, is facing upwards. That's a serious concern, and so much so that people should give, in such a situation, if one wore the tefillin like that, one should give tzedakah or fast because of that. That's seen as a bad thing. It is therefore a good idea to feel around and see on the bicep, to feel around on the head, to make sure the straps are the right orientation specifically. And this is actually a reason why it is. This is the reason why you'll see in today's modern tefillin, people actually color both sides of the straps black, even underside, to help alleviate this concern if a mistake is made as well. Now, what if the straps I have wore out on my tefillin? May I use the excess straps from another tefillin? Let's say I have another tefillin which has longer straps or an older tefillin. May I use those? The answer is yes, but there is a limitation in that. The shel rosh, the one that belongs to the head, the one that goes on the head, is considered holier than the one on the hand. So I can elevate one's kedusha, but one cannot de-escalate it. So that means to say, if I have the straps of a shel yad, I can use it for a shel rosh, but I cannot use the straps from a shel rosh and bring it down and use it for a shel yad. That's one limitation as well. And similarly, if let's say the tefillin snaps, the straps snap, may I take the snap part and sort of use it as the starting point for the tefillin again? The answer is yes, but you can't flip it. You can't use the bottom part as the part to start with because that was initially further away from the scrolls and therefore is deemed less holy, so I can't flip it and make it make the part that was close to the scrolls now at the very bottom as well. So these are what's called Ma'alim B'Kodesh. We ascend in holiness, but V'loy Marini, we don't go downwards. That's the end of the first concept. Our second concept is the treatment of the tefillin. How does one treat them? The tefillin, obviously, are parchments which have sections of the Torah and Hashem's name in it, so they have to be treated with great respect. So let's take a look at some of these applications. What if one's tefillin falls on the ground? If it was outside of their box, God forbid, in that case, the person needs to fast. That's seen as a very serious thing. If the tefillin falls within its box, in that case, one should give it tzedakah. So these are very serious things. One should be very, very careful. If one removes the tefillin to go to the restroom, does one make a bracha when one comes back? And the answer is yes, one would make a new bracha. But why is this different from a talis? When one takes off one's talis to go to the bathroom, one does not make a new bracha. The reason is because a talis can technically be worn in the bathroom. It doesn't have the name of God. We just take it off because it is not respectful to wear it into the bathroom. But the tefillin may not be worn in the bathroom, and therefore entering the bathroom is an area where one may not fulfill the mitzvah, and that's considered a break. May I wear tefillin while I eat? The answer is not for a meal, but for a achilas arai, which is like a snack, one can. That would be less than a kibbetzah. And sometimes that might be the situation where, let's say, a person has a coffee, as an example, but it would be allowed in those circumstances as well. What about while I'm wearing my tefillin, may I put my head down for rest? I'm feeling really tired. The answer is no. Not even a shenas arai, not even a short nap. The concern is that if a person naps, they may come to pass air, which is considered a very big spiritual concern when we're wearing tefillin as well. What must I do when I'm wearing my tefillin? So one must remember what is contained in them. One is meant to be mindful of the ideas that one is attaching to one's body in order to remember these ideas and live by them. How do we keep focus? Because, I mean, it's so hard today. How do you keep focus for that amount of time? So the truth is action helps reorient the mind. And that's why throughout the davening, a person is supposed to be mamashmesh, to feel and move their tefillin, to remind themselves. In fact, in the davening, you'll see in the Siddurim, in the Pasuk of Poseach Es Yodecha, in the Kriya Shah, where we talk about the tefillin, or Ksharatim Lois Yodecha, or Yodot HaFoyis Benenecha, one should move the tefillin in those appropriate times, and throughout the course of davening, to remember that one's wearing it as well. Obviously, one has to be very careful to have a clean body when one is wearing tefillin, and therefore, one has to be very careful not to pass air when one is wearing tefillin, so much so that if, let's say, a person has diarrhea, and a person is not able to guarantee that, a person should not wear tefillin there or would be exempt from tefillin under those circumstances. What happens if a person is just generally feeling sick? So if a person is not able to focus, doesn't have the focus of mind, then one does not need to wear tefillin because one is obligated to be aware. We're told that the Torah, the tefillin are specifically a mitzvah where a person needs to be thinking and aware of what's going on. Can a boy below bar mitzvah wear tefillin? The answer is only if he's old and mature enough to have a clean body and a clean mind. So when do bar mitzvah boys usually put on tefillin? So there are different practices. Some say 3 months before the bar mitzvah. Many other practice of 30 days before the bar mitzvah. And that's a time where the bar mitzvah boy can start doing the chinuch, the preparations, to be able to be ready for the tefillin as well. How often should I check my tefillin? So the truth is we assume that the tefillin are what's called a cheskas kashrus, that since they were made in a proper state, they will continue being in a proper state unless there's another reason to think otherwise. However, it is best practice to check them, as suggested in halacha, to check them twice every 7 years, because sweat and temperature affect them, and those seep in and affect the parchment, which could invalidate them as well. There are times where I must check them, and that is, let's say there was an incident. The tefillin were left in the car, it was a hot day. That's not good, that's heat, and one knows that. What the tefillin were exposed to a lot of moisture. There was a hurricane, God forbid. And in such a situation, the boxes were broken or severed in some way. One has to check them in those cases. If one needs to check the tefillin because of an incident, and there's no one to check them, there's no sofer nearby, should one put on tefillin during that time? So the answer is yes, but without a bracha. So one should assume they're still all right, but without a bracha as well. Obviously, if there's somebody who has another pair of tefillin, a person should put them on as well. Finally, last concept that we're going to look at together, and that is the concept of removing the tefillin. Obviously, the Torah sections written in the tefillin, they need to be treated with respect. There's a number of protocols which are worthwhile being aware of. So a few questions to get there. So what is the earliest one can remove one's tefillin during the davening? So one is only allowed to remove tefillin after having recited the third set of kedushas. One says the kedusha, which is the sukkim kodosh, 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 Hashem tzavakos, and the pasuk of Baruch Hashem Kavoy, which is said Three times during davening, once in the Birkas Kriya Shema before the Shema, once during the Kedusha in the repetition of the Shemoneh Esrei, and once during Avodat Zion. One can only take off the tefillin after the third Kedusha has been said. In Nusach Sfarad, if it's a laning day, the Torah is put back after that, so one should wait until the Torah is returned. Obviously, one should keep the tefillin on until the end of davening. We're talking about a situation where this is not possible in a specific circumstance as well. It should not be that one's natural doing, one's default doing, is that at the end of davening, one's taking off one's tefillin, that one wouldn't start leaving a very important meeting before the end of the meeting in any other context. So it has to be the same when spending the time with the Almighty. When are the tefillin removed on Rosh Chodesh? So on Rosh Chodesh, remove them after the Kaddish, after Uvalet Zion, which is before the Musaf of Rosh Chodesh is recited. And that's a time where everybody takes them off quickly without talking and then moves into Musaf. Are tefillin worn on Chol Hamoed? This is a debate, the Beis Yosef, that's the Shulchan Aruch, a paskening for the Sfaradim, and says that one does not wear tefillin on Chol Hamoed. The Ramah, who paskens for Ashkenazim, says yes, one would wear tefillin on Chol Hamoed, and the practice is generally to do it without a bracha, although some do it with a bracha even then. It is worthwhile noting that the Vilna Gaon disagrees and says for Kabbalistic reasons, a person should not wear tefillin on Chol Hamoed, and that has become the practice, the predominant practice in Israel, and also among certain Hasidic communities. But a person needs to make sure to find out one's family minhag. If a person is of German or Lithuanian descent, and one is not to have Hasidic blood within them, and one lives in the diaspora, one should certainly be putting on tefillin during Chol Hamoed. These things, one should not change one's family minhag because of different social norms. And if one is wearing the ones on Chol Hamoed, when should they be removed then? So the truth is they should be removed during the during before the Hallel is said on Chol Hamoed. And so for regular people, that's during the Shemoneh Esrei. And for the Baal Tefillah, that would be after Hallel on Pesach, but before Hallel on Sukkot, because it's time to remove them when everybody else is getting their Lulavim and Esrogim as well. Then the next question is what about a shul? Should a shul have a fixed minhag? Should a shul have only yes tefillin or only no tefillin? And the truth is, in the old days, that's the way it used to be. It used to be that a shul would have a fixed minhag. And anybody who was the exception to that, so let's say it was a shul where everybody wore tefillin, anybody who didn't wear tefillin would have to sit behind the mechitza in a separate section. So it should not be agudas, where people are dividing into different factions. However, today, Rav Moshe Feinstein points out that many people just daven in shuls, not their own nusach, just because of convenience and timing and so on. So therefore, it's become the melting pot, and this has become less of a concern in general. What position should the tefillin be removed in the same way they were put on, standing for Ashkenazim, sitting for Sfaradim? What is the order of removal? So first one unwraps the one's hand, then one takes off the shel rosh and wraps it, then takes off the shel yad, the remaining part of the shel yad, and wraps it. And the reason is because the Torah says, v'hayu, they will be, and that means to say that they both need to be on till the end, meaning to say when the shel rosh is there, they need to both be on, so one leaves the shel yad on while one is taking off the shel rosh. When can I not remove my tefillin? So if one is in the presence of one's Rebbe, one's main teacher, or in the presence of a Sefer Torah, one is not allowed to remove the tefillin in that case. One has to move to the side to take them before taking them off as well. Which hand should I use to remove my shel rosh with? Obviously the shel yad, it's only one hand you have the option to do it with, but the shel rosh, which hand should one use? So the left hand or the weaker hand should be used to show reluctance, and the minhag is to kiss the tefillin before putting it on or taking it off as well. When is the talis removed? So like the talis goes on before the talis goes off after the tefillin as well. Finally, how are they stored? The tefillin are stored in a way that one needs to make sure that one pulls out the shel yad first, because that's the one one puts on first as well. However, it cannot be that the shel yad is on top of the shel rosh, because the shel rosh is more holy. Therefore, it's best to have a side-by-side case. Sometimes there's a problem. You'll see sometimes the Israeli army tefillin cases, which is like a tube. And so that could run into issues if you store the tube vertically. The tube should be put down sideways, side by side, and one should avoid having one tefillah upon the other one as well. With this, we conclude most of the practical aspects of tefillin. Be'ezrat Hashem, we'll continue tomorrow. In the meantime, have a wonderful, meaningful